Welcome to Torati Mecha Parsha with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Shira Smiles, and today we'll be learning Parsha Tazria. Parsha Tazria basically has two themes found within. The first is about a woman who gives birth to a boy and the process of her purification, as well as the very famous mitzvah of Bris Milah, which happens on the eighth day. We know that the Bris Milah is like a korban, like a sacrifice to Hashem, and hence you will find many of the customs that are connected with the bris are found by korbanos as well. There is, for example, a minhag that you will find in some communities of passing the baby from the kvater to different people until you get to the father, who then brings it to the person who puts it on kisei shel Eliyahu. This is similar to the way the blood was brought from kohen to kohen until it was brought on the mizbeach. Indeed, they say that the sandik's legs become like a place of the korban itself. The kvater, those who bring it in, is related to the word kitoret, the incense offering. And hence, just like an offering, the animal had to be around in this world for a minimum of 8 days. So too, the child is 8 days old when it's brought as a korban, as an ability to come close, kirva, to Hashem, to the ultimate brit of Bris Milah. The second part of the parsha details the laws of Tzarat. We translate it as leprosy. That's really an incorrect translation. It was a spiritual disease that affected people. And the Gemara tells us that it came for different ailments that a person may have suffered from in terms of spiritually not being connected, most particularly for Lashon Hara, for speaking evil, as well as Saras Ayin, for having a narrow eye, Gassus Ruach, for haughtiness, arrogance. These were all elements that were afflicted within a person that Hashem was sending them a sign that you need to work on yourself. Parsha Tazria details the different parts of the body wherein Sarat could be afflicted, the head and other parts of the body, and the Parsha ends with the idea of Sarat on one's clothing. In all of these cases, the person would take either themselves and or their clothes and show it to a Kohen, and the Kohen would decide whether it was indeed Sarat or not, and then the process of purification had to begin. First and foremost, it was secluded for 7 days, re-examined, and then decided whether it was indeed Sarat, it was not, and the appropriate way to purify it and to heal the person. It is not by accident that a person with Sarat went to the Kohen and did not go to a doctor, because again, as we mentioned, this was not a physical disease, it was a spiritual disease. Rav Druk in Eish Tamid notes, why specifically did they go to the Kohanim? Because the Kohanim did not have these ailments per se, as a group of people that afflicted a person with Sarat. So one we spoke about is Lashon Hara. The Kohanim were known to be Ohev Shalom Verodev Shalom. They loved people. They loved peace. They weren't interested in creating machloket, dissension among people. So they are the perfect person to go to be the model of how to learn, how to get along with people. Saras Ayin, narrow eye, the Kohanim, Levim, did not have a chelik and nachla. They didn't have a portion in the land of Israel. Therefore, they didn't feel like somebody's taking away something that belongs to them. They understood that everything comes from the Ribono Shel Olam. And Gassus Ruach, haughtiness, Aaron HaKohen, who's the model of the group of Kohanim, he and Moshe Rabbeinu, also a Levi, said, V'anachnu ma, who are we? We know that Aaron HaKohen had such a beautiful view of people. He wasn't one with arrogance. He had a very good eye. We see this when he would meet Moshe Rabbeinu. Chumash describes, V'rachava samachli bilibo. Hashem tells Moshe, he's going to see you and he's going to rejoice in his heart. There is no feeling of jealousy. This was the characteristic of Aaron HaKohen and the characteristic that was given over to that Shevet, and hence they become the model of those who are able to teach others what does it mean, how to get along. Indeed, as the Datraga points out, The Kohanim are the ones that serve the Ribono Shel Olam, and they really model what it means to have your total focus on how can we bring Kvod Shamayim, God's honor, into this world. They mirror that of the Malachim, about whom we say every morning when they praise the Ribono Shel Olam, Kulam Ahuvim, Kulam Berurim, that they are all beloved, they are all have this clarity, and they all say together, Kadosh, Kadosh, Kadosh. The Malachim are the paradigmatic model of what it means that each one understands that they have their own role, their own job to accomplish in this world, and nobody feels threatened by another Malach. The Kohanim were those models where everyone knew the Kohanim had their Mishmar. They had their time to serve in the Beis HaMikdash, and they knew exactly what their role was and what their job was. That's the model for Klal Yisrael, that you have to know that everyone that was created in this world has a purpose, has a function in this world, and nobody can take away from you what your job is. Nobody can take away from that which Ribono Shel Olam wants you to have. And indeed, the L'titcha Elyon brings down a gevaldic idea. We know that one of the things that the Mitzorah has to do in order to get purified is to shave all of their hair, which seems a little bit awkward and strange. One of the reasons for this, the L'titcha Elyon brings, is that Kadosh Baruch Hu tells Io very clearly that each hair in one's head, each follicle of hair has been planted there by the Ribono Shel Olam, and every single hair has its exact place. So everything the Ribono Shel Olam does has its exact place. And that's the message to teach the Mitzorah. By shaving the hair, they are being reminded that just like look at every follicle of hair, focus in on it, and notice that every hair comes from its own place. Everything that you have is destined for the Ribono Shel Olam. The Ribono Shel Olam has orchestrated your life, as the Nesiva Shalom points out, that every single thing that happens to us in our lives is exactly when and where and how it should be. If one has that clarity of vision, one doesn't then say, well, this one took from me, and how come this one has more than I have? And as the Nesiva Shalom points out at the beginning of Parshat Lech Lecha, a beautiful mimer, he says, because each and every one of us have different jobs in this world and different things to accomplish, hence our lives are dramatically different. And for one person may have challenges and troubles in life, one person may have a life of impoverishment, one of wealth, because each one needs to serve Hashem in the exact place that they have been gifted. And when we have that clarity of vision, the vision of the hair follicles, then there is no Sarasayan. I'm not begrudging another person for what they have. There's no Lashon Hara, because Lashon Hara is about I'm feeling jealous about the other person, therefore I want to put them down and speak negatively about them. All of this is just shifted when a person has an Ayin Tova, a good eye. Indeed, it's interesting that Vayomer Yehuda points out that the Torah begins with a model of what jealousy is about and the effects of jealousy from Cain and Hevel. And the Mefarshim bring down that Cain, which brought from the fruit of the ground, he brought linen, he brought pishtan. And we know that Hevel brought from the sheep, he brought semer. And these two korbanos did not mix very well, because we know that Cain killed Hevel. And hence we have, albeit it's a chok, we don't understand it, but perhaps this gives us an insight into the idea of shatnez, where we're not allowed to wear wool and linen together. And by not wearing wool and linen together, it's a continuous reminder. You buy something, you have to check it for shatnez. It reminds me, I can't put on me something that has this opposition to it, where one was jealous of another, where the effects of jealousy are so tremendous. Stay away from semer pishtan. Stay away from jealousy. Live a life of ava va'achva, of love. My friends, with this we can appreciate a gevaldic insight of the Lekach V'Alibuv. He notes that if you take a look at the word nega, which is the word found in our parsha of Negayim of afflictions. Nega is spelled Nun Gimel Ayin. If you would move the Ayin from the end of the word to the beginning of the word, you would have the word Oneg, which is pleasure, which is enjoyment. The Chumash tells us Hanega lo hafach et eino. Literally, the nega did not change its where it's at. It didn't change its appearance. On a deeper level, my friends, the reason that we have a nega is Hanega lo hafach et eino. It didn't switch the ayin. It didn't move the ayin from the end, which is saras ayin, which is metaphorically the narrow eye. If I would be able to put the ayin is the I and the letter ayin at the beginning, and be able to be proud of my ayin. I have an ayin tova. I put it at the beginning of the word, and I look with everybody with that ayin, with that good eye. Then I will live a life of oneg, a life of enjoyment, a life of appreciation in this world. And this really, my friends, is our choice. Where do you put the ayin? Is the ayin at the end? I'm begrudging everyone. That everyone I look at with a narrow eye, with a smallness of eye. The eye, the ayin is at the end. Or do I have an expansive eye, where the ayin could be at the beginning of the word, and I just look at everyone with a feeling of blessing and goodness and desire that they should have more? Indeed, it is said in the name of the Sabbath Slobodka that he would pass by people's houses and wish good morning to the house. And they would say to him, well, no one is in the house. Why are you talking to houses? And he'd say, when I pass this house, I think about the Rosh Yeshiva that lives in this house. And I want to give him a bracha that he should have a good day. This is a person with an ayin tova. When we pass by somebody's house, so we know that they're going through a difficult time. Do we stop for a moment and say, Hashem, have rachamim on this person? Or this person's having a simcha. We give them a bracha for their simcha. You see people, little children walking to school. Do we have a good eye and say, Hashem, in our mind, a bracha, you should have a great day learning Torah? Is our eye focused on seeing positive things and giving brachas? Then our life is an oneg. Our life is full of pleasure. It's an expansive eye. But if I'm always begrudging people, then my eye is very narrow. It's at the end of the word. And a person like this suffers. It's a nega. They suffer spiritually. They suffer physically. And my friends, the choice is ours. Where are we placing the ayin? Where are we placing the eye?